I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. I cut my teeth on wedding rings.
Dude, that's pretty cool.
Man, that is good.
I'm just sad. Dude, that's pretty good.
This is The Gloom, bringing you weekly interviews with F3 Omaha Packs, exploring their F3 experiences and finding those sticky elements that create the glue in the gloom.
Shout out to our sponsors. Major Team Mortgage, Omaha Laser Dentistry, Exclusively Eye Care, Liberty Core Real Estate, Avier Wealth Management, and Apex Men's Clinic. We appreciate their support.
Liberty Core Real Estate is your homegrown real estate broker. If you're looking to buy or sell real estate, whether personal or investment, Armando, aka Brian, and Megan Michaels' company is ready to serve you. With Command Center in Old Town Elkhorn and agents all throughout the metro, they are more than ready to guide and serve you in your next real estate endeavor. Whether your next move needs to happen now or in 5 years, call or text Armando at 402-770-2165 to get your questions answered. In a special offer for F3 Nation PAX members, Liberty Core will donate $250 to your sponsor of choosing for every closed transaction. Stop looking, start finding today with Liberty Core Real Estate.
Now let's get back to the gloom.
And we're back, coming to you live.
We're here for the first time.
From the Nomad in downtown Elkhorn. If you've never been here or never heard of it, that's because it's brand new. But you should check it out. You are here for the gloom. And so we want to get to this guy's story. Personally, this guy has really impacted me just because he's vulnerable and he cares. And I love the way he loves. And I hope I don't cry while hearing his story. But phenomenal leader, has been with F3 for a while. And maybe he'll share this, maybe he won't. But I knew he was going to be a site queue and a leader when the first day I met him. But I got our man Stripes, and I also have a special guest named Pony Express.
Glad to be back.
Yeah, you're back, brother, in the flesh. Man, Stripes, take us back, brother. Take us to the beginning of time. No, take us just to your sort of start of F3 journey. Who EH'd you? How'd you get the name Stripes? And then first workout, would love to hear that.
Yeah. First, obviously, thanks a lot for being here. It's an honor to be the first in person here at the Nomad. It's awesome in here. So glad to be here. Yeah, going back to that first day, that's I think that's when you became Plague the Prophet. I guess we can touch on that story. But yeah, Chucky EH'd me. Known Chucky for 10, 12 years prior to coming out that first day at the berm. Our wives kind of knew each other, had next door cabins out at Johnson Lake, and it was Labor Day weekend 2022, and we were out there for the weekend, and Chucky was kind of talking to us about, I think I'd gone on a run that day just on my own, and Chucky was out there, and we were kind of talking about working out and running, that kind of stuff, and he told me about this F3 thing, and I was like, yeah, sounds good, whatever. I kind of got a routine. I'm good, but we'll see. And Chucky was relentless. He's not always, that great of a headlocker, I don't think, based on what I've heard, but he got me, and I kind of checked it out and went down the rabbit hole and was pretty intrigued. And
he can be annoying though, right?
Same
Chuck. Persistent. Yeah. Sorry, Chuck. Not annoying. Persistent.
There's a lot of adjectives we could use for Chucky, but we'll save those for later. But yeah, it was that next Thursday, came out that first day at the berm. Came out to pre-run. I think there was five of us that day. You were one of them, and we got to talking. And like you mentioned, said that I was from Bennington, and that was the day that you said that I was going to be the guy to plant the first flag in Bennington. And I was like, okay, I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't even know if I'm going to come back tomorrow or the next day, but whatever. But yeah, that first workout was a good one. Pantyhose was on the queue. It's kind of funny, like, I can't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, but like, I remember that first workout vividly. Like, I have a really bad memory on a lot of things, but like, it was, I remember a lot about that first workout. I didn't think it was that hard. And so but pantyhose did like leg day that day. We did a bunch of leg stuff and I don't usually do leg stuff, but still I was just kind of like, I don't know. This is not, I don't know if this is for me. And the next day, actually, I went to combine and truly was on the queue, and that was
an ass kicker.
Bad. I was like, okay, this is definitely.
So you're basically, let me get this right. You're basically saying truly leads a more difficult beatdown than
that.
Pantyhose?
You said that, not me.
Okay.
In that particular that week, it was that was the case. But no, pantyhose can put it on you too. That's for sure. As far as the name goes, got out in the circle at the end of the beatdown, obviously, and kind of just started talking about myself. And funny that you talk about being vulnerable. I guess that very first day, I kind of threw some stuff out there, which is very unlike me. A bunch of strangers that I've never met before to throw a bunch of stuff out there. But I remember one of the first things I said was, it's like I always do when I talk about my kids. I said, I got three kids at home. And then a guardian angel at home talking about our first daughter that we lost. And I remember vividly, like the guys were like, ooh.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And then tried to lighten it up a little bit and talked about some different things, talked about my tattoos. Cause that's always a question, right? It's an interesting tattoo story that I won't go down that road, but, I was fortunate that pantyhose was nice and didn't give me like tramp stamp or something like that.
You have a tramp stamp? Let's see it.
We'll talk on air. It's not exactly a tramp stamp.
This is a new segment of the gloom called Show Us Your Awkward Tattoo.
Oh, yeah. But anyway, I ended up mentioning at one point that, I have Marine Corps history and then also that I'm a basketball referee and I'm a very patriotic person. And so kind of landed on stripes as kind of some dual meaning with the basketball stripes and the stars and stripes that we break out on Fridays for Freedom Friday. So
Freedom Friday, baby.
Yeah. So that's how we landed on the name. That was the infamous first day in the gloom.
Well, I want to get to Freedom Friday because I'm not familiar. But I do want to ask. So, pantyhose is beat down. You're like, I don't know if this is for me. Why'd you give it a second chance?
I think just the guys I connected with, like I said, I think that first pre-run was cool because, started talking to, I think there's five of us on the pre-run and, somehow got thrown on a text chain about the next day, I think, about going, checking out another site. And, it was going to be at Combines and I was like, that's not too far away. So I'll give it a second chance at least. And, like I said, that was a lot tougher one, truly put it on us that day. I think it's a lot of the same reasons that a lot of guys keep coming back and that I kept coming back. It's those initial connections that you made with some of those guys that were very welcoming and friendly and, wanted to come back and keep going.
Nice. Initial impressions.
Yeah. First impressions. Yeah. I knew Chucky for a while and I knew that there had to be better guys around than him. So, like he spoke so highly of F3. I was like, okay, I gotta check it out. Well, and some other guys.
And Chucky is a good guy, right? I mean, don't get us wrong, right? We're just razzing him because it's Chucky. But, when I hear you talk about that first workout, I remember that too, because we were, it was pantyhose first FQ and Bennington had been on our mind. And it was sort of like, but we need some Bennington guys. And it was like, where even is the boundary line of Bennington anyway? And then like you show up and I'm just sort of like, I just had a feeling. I'm like, this is the guy. This is the guy that's going to do it. And then you got to do all that, which we'll hear about later. I am curious. You talk about, sort of the difficulty of the workout and your military background. I always wonder, and it seems like you maintain fitness. You haven't lost 60 pounds or whatever. Some guys have that story. But what, from a fitness perspective, how have you seen that sort of grow or progress over the years?
Yeah, I had, after getting out of the Marine Corps, I had kind of gone in different stages, kind of let it go a little bit and then got back on the track a little bit. And at that point, I had gotten into a pretty good routine. The early mornings weren't a problem for me because I was getting up 5 to 6 days a week, starting pretty early in the morning, 5-ish, and I would run 3 to 5 miles 3 or 4 days a week and then do some lifting after that. So that was actually the part that was maybe the hardest, breaking up that routine that I was really comfortable in.
Right.
But you know, obviously with the different types of workouts and the variety and mixing it up, it was probably what I was needed, because a lot of what I was doing was pretty repetitive anyway. But, yeah, the fitness side of things, I would say that the hardest part for me, I think, lately, especially, was coming back from kind of my injury. Beginning of last year, in January, I tore my meniscus in reffing basketball. And that caused me to obviously stop pre-running and get out of that even F3 routine. I think my first year and a half in F3, I think I probably pre-ran pretty much every time that I posted.
Just an aggressive technical call.
right. Yeah. But, you know, when I was unable to do that anymore, it was tough. It was a hard stretch for me because, again, just like everybody talks about on here, the pre-running and the pre-activities are where you're really able to make those deep connections and build those relationships. And so when I was kind of having to stop doing that, it was kind of hard to push through that. And, I decided then to kind of back off of a little bit during the really hard time of year for me during basketball season, where I'm putting a lot of wear and tear on my body anyway, with late nights and early mornings. It was just got to be a little bit too much. But I think that journey, as far as the fitness side of things goes, is I think the biggest thing for me was like the competitiveness, I think. Mm-hmm. When I would run, I wouldn't always push myself. I would just be getting the miles in and try to, you know, burn calories, whatever the case may be. But then you get out there and you're with guys and you're talking and you're losing track of everything else. And then next thing you know, you're running a 7:30 pace for 4 miles, or then you see somebody on Strava that's killing it and you're like, oh, I want to try to keep up with them, you know, or whatever. So I think that accountability and all that side of things on the fitness side was really important for me to just keep it going and to push myself to that next level, I'd say.
That's good. So like during this down period where you tore your meniscus, were you able to participate at all? Like, I know pre-running obviously went out the window, but did you dial it back a little bit?
Yeah. So that was kind of the start of a pretty kind of a rough year in 2024. That happened on January 30th, which was a Tuesday night. It was a Tuesday night game. I had the flag at Badger Point for 4.5 months at that point. So I was like, I got another 8 months to go, you know?
Yeah.
And it worked out well, I guess, at first, because if I had done that on any other night of the week, I probably, you know, if it was a Monday night, I wouldn't have been at Badger Point on Tuesday,
right?
At least to plant the flag. And I had in my mind, I was like, I'm going to be there every Tuesday to at least keep planting this flag. I got to, it's a commitment that I made, and whether I can go through the workout or whether I just sit there and do what I can, you know, I'm planting the flag every week. And so it was nice because it was a Tuesday and I had 6 days to at least limp around. I went to the ER that next day. My knee had swelled up to the size of a coconut, but I was able to kind of gimp around and put off having surgery for about 3 months. But with a torn meniscus, you can push through it.
Yeah.
You know, they're not going to hurt anything worse. You can tear it worse, but it's just like a pain threshold, really. So I continued to be there every Tuesday that I was around, and I wasn't traveling for work or anything like that. But obviously I wasn't able to participate as much as possible, but with the pre-runs and stuff like that. But yeah, just kept it going. And like I said, it was important to me to just fulfill that commitment and still be there every week.
You're still lifting though, right? I guess I have so much on my mind. I want to make sure guys get to hear from your story, Stripes. I feel like I know you so well, but talk us through the mental battle sort of portion of this. Cause I know we've talked, like, if I can't work out, like, look out, right? You don't want to be around me. And I think you're maybe similar to that, but talk us through sort of how you've sort of worked through that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, obviously doing whatever it is, running, lifting, whatever, it's a good stress reliever and everything like that. So when you're not able to, and I've always been really competitive too. So like it, when you're not able to do as much as you want and what you've got physical limitations, it affects your mental state too. Mm-hmm. So I think it was, But that's another beautiful thing about F3, right? There's so many guys out there to support you. I can't tell you how many guys reached out to me when they heard that I'd, you know, that I went down, and, you know, that means the world. And, you know, that just being there, even if it's not where you're able to participate and push yourself and go 110 miles an hour, being there, which as I've progressed through my F3 tenure, I guess, you know, that's really what has become even more important to me, hearing the COTs.
Sure.
And being there, you know, for the second F side of things, and even growing in the third F side of things. So while it was tough mentally to push through that just inability to get out there and do everything that you wanted to, it was everything else that was supporting me through that time to that really helped.
What would you say to guys that are kind of on the mend? I mean, I've heard some mixed reviews of guys, you know, they go down and they just decide not to show back up. Mm-hmm. You know, your story sounds like, hey, I had a lot of support and that's why I continued. I mean, you had some obligations too. And I think of Honey Singer, he just had neck or back surgery and mm-hmm. he's out walking right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, doing what he can. So what would you say to guys that may be on the mend that maybe you're a little discouraged about not being able to participate fully?
Yeah, I think it's different for everybody, right? I mean, Steeple is the same way. He tore his meniscus, same injury. And like he made me look like I was, you know, laying on the couch. Like he was out there. I mean, I can't believe how far he pushed it and how quickly and he recovered and everything. So I think it's different for everybody. I mean, the one thing that I would hope that guys would do is not just say, all right, but I'm done now, you know, or whatever. I can't get out there and do the things that I want to do physically. So I'm just going to remove myself yeah. from it. And that's, I think it was Khakis and a lot of other guys that reached out to me and said, stay involved, stay engaged. You know, even if you can't show up to the beat down, you know, where everybody's going to be at for coffee, mm-hmm. go to coffee and, yeah. you know, still maintain those relationships and still stay engaged is what I would tell guys if they're a little bit beat up.
Yeah. Yeah, so you kind of mentioned, you're mentioning some of these relationships, and so you started, right, sort of in Northwest, but I look at you today and you've got relationships all across the region, right? Like you and Farva are really close. You've got, you know, guys like Khakis. I mean, how did that, like, what was that progression like? Like, how did you go about building some of those relationships?
Well, with Farva, we had kind of a mutual friend that I went all the way back to college with that was in the police OPD with him. And it had to have been either my second or third week. And it was at the armory and I showed up for a pre-run and my normal group kind of didn't go there that day. And I just kind of was like, I'm just going to go here. I've never been here before. I'm going to go check it out. And Farva was there pre-running, of course. And we got to talking and right away we connected those dots that the guy that it's actually his, right next to his locker at the time was one of my best friends. And then trying to keep up with him on the pre-run and talk at the same time was a challenge. And that was one of the harder pre-runs I've ever been on because I was like, I want to talk to this guy, but man, he's fast. But so that was kind of a personal relationship or the dots that you just connect. But I think that's the way it works for me with every connection that I've made, you get to talk and you're able to connect some sort of dots.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's where those relationships start. And then it just goes out from there and kind of not too far into my F3 experience. I wanted to get out and see other places. I didn't want to just stay in my little area. At first, that's what I envisioned. I'll check out the berm on Thursdays and, you know, maybe and Helix on Tuesdays or whatever. And then but then just like a lot of guys, next thing you know, it's 5 or 6 days a week and you're, you know, going 30, 35 minutes to get to a site.
What was the hook that like, do you remember that moment when you were like, yeah, this is more than just whatever Chucky was selling to me, right? Like what was that like? Do you remember that moment or what?
Yeah, I don't think it was like a specific moment. I think it was just a collection of kind of what I talked about. When you see guys get out there that are leading and that are becoming vulnerable and that are just sharing a lot of stuff that, you know, that just sharpens each other, right? Mm-hmm. That to me is like, this is a really good group. And I talked about it. For me, I think the biggest thing that that really made it explode was I had been out of the Marine Corps for close to 13 years when I started F3, and I was missing kind of that void of that camaraderie, that brotherhood. And I talked about that in my VQ at the berm, that, you know, this is the closest thing that I've ever experienced to the Marine Corps. Now, not just from a standpoint of the physical side of it, because obviously the boot camp style workouts and things like that are very similar to the cadence and all that kind of stuff, very similar, but just the connection, the brotherhood, and the camaraderie is something I think that I was missing in my life, that I don't think I realized how much I missed that. And it was a void that F3 immediately filled. And I was like, this is it. This is what I've been missing since I got out of the Corps. So
that's awesome. Yeah. I always wonder, cause you see it, right? It's like a guy will start and then all of a sudden it's like, he's posting everywhere. He's pre-running, you know, every day he's posting. And then, you know, it just sort of like the fire is lit. And I love that. I think, it's just cool to be able to watch that in another guy. I curious, when you think about the relationships, and you know, we'd like to kind of talk about the Concentrica too, right? And so thinking about, you know, what else maybe contributed? Was it, you know, did you have a chance to go to Q Source? Would love any thoughts you have on that. And then also, like, has this had any impact on your relationships with your wife or your kids or anything like that?
Yeah, that part of it probably took a little bit longer for me to get to. And it's probably just on me. I didn't go to a lot. That was a thing that I didn't always. I was kind of like a go for the workout. I don't really know if I want to go to coffee unless Chucky's there, unless Pantyhose is there, unless somebody I'm comfortable with is there. So it did take me a little bit of longer time to branch out and make those connections. But I would say once I started to feel more comfortable in that second F setting, go into sites that talked more about, that had a Q Source or something like that, dove into Free to Lead, then I think that's when it did spill over into other aspects of my life, with my wife, with my kids. And I can tell a difference, I think, from the days that I post and the days that I don't post.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody would probably say that. And I think my wife would, and my kids would probably say the same thing. Like, they know the difference between dad when he comes, you know, home at 7 and we come downstairs and he's been at F3 or he slept till 7 and, you know, we're up and everybody's grumpy or right. Whatever. So, I think it definitely has spilled over into that. And then the other thing too, that have dove into a lot more recently, obviously with kind of our book club that has been super impactful in my personal life. You know, obviously some of the different the two books that we've gone through, and then just other books that we've talked about that I've gone out on my own, and just those are the experiences that I think takes the whole thing to an even different level.
Right.
And so that's, I've been super, super thankful for that group that we've got. And, that's had a significant impact on my personal life.
Yeah. I'm never surprised. I mean, it just happens all the time. Like, I'll have a conversation with my wife the night before beat down. We have a disagreement or something. And then you go talk to one of the guys there about, you know, my M was giving me a hard time about this. And then I don't know, 90% of the time it feels like the guys are supporting the M, like giving you a different perspective. I come home and, hey, I was wrong. And I thought about it this way. My buddy helped me out, made me think about this. Curious if you agree with something like that.
Oh, for sure. For sure. I think that as men, we're stubborn, right? And we think we're always right. Or I do, at least. I think I'm always right. And in fact, on Tuesday, Cheap Seats led at Badger Point, and he talked about that. And it was funny. He was like, my M and I have just been kind of, we've been kind of on arguing and bickering for the last couple of weeks, and we just haven't been on the same page. And, I knew that I was going to talk about that in my COT. So last night I just went and apologized to her and everybody just kind of laughed, and it was like, it got better, you know, everything's better. So like having another peer, male peer call you out on your BS is pretty powerful.
Yeah.
And I think that you get that a lot in F3, which is awesome.
Did you get that in the military? I am curious. Like, I know it's, you got the group of guys, whatever, but are you talking about the stuff you talk about at F3? And are they, I know they'll probably call you out on some BS, but I mean, was the conversation as deep? Do you open up as much?
Based on my experience, probably not. You know, there's a few guys that you become really, really, really close with, right? That you would call friends and not just, you know, and after you get out that you're still close with and that you probably make those connections with. But just on the day-to-day, I would say not as much. In my 8 years on active duty in the Marine Corps, I don't think that I had as many deep connections and relationships that went outside of the day-to-day routine as I've probably made in my 2.5.
What do you think it is about F3 that kind of makes it an incubator for those types of conversations with guys?
I think it's just when you become vulnerable and when you've seen other guys become vulnerable, it's powerful stuff. I've heard a lot of guys talk about it. I remember Wait Time, I think it was his birthday queue at the Oracle, talking about how if you're not being vulnerable in F3, you're not doing it right. You're not getting the full experience. And so I try to carry that over into a lot of my COTs if I'm leading, or just in pre-run talks, you know, or whatever. Because like I said, I've been through a lot of experiences that have been bottled up for a long time and didn't always talk about them a lot. But like when you know that you can talk about anything in front of a group of guys and they won't judge you and they'll do nothing but support you, it allows you to open up more and allows you to, it's been really healthy for me to be able to get some of that stuff out.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking of your, you led a workout this morning and your COT there. And I think just, that space, the space to just be and share what's sort of on your mind, on your heart, doesn't exist in the world outside of F3. Like, you can't do that at work, right?
Yeah.
Probably get let go or referred to employee services or something, right? For some of the stuff. Right. And so it's, you know, just to have a space where that's like, that's the norm. That's the goal almost, right? Is like, just help you get to the end of yourself. But talk to us a little bit. So would love to hear, and I don't know if you know, your COT from this morning is coming to mind for me. And you kind of mentioned a little bit of this earlier, but you know, when I ask you a question, like, tell us about your kids, how many kids you got, what ages, boys, girls, talk us through that and sort of the meaning there. Cause I remember a pre-run where we talked about this and it was just really, meant a lot that you shared that with me.
Yeah. We, just to kind of get the story, my wife and I, we lost our first daughter. She was stillborn. My wife carried her for about 8.5 months. And so we were just about to cross the finish line and we didn't obviously quite get there. And it was kind of just a mysterious deal. We never really knew why, but it just was part of God's plan. And, so now, you know, if somebody says, you know, how many kids you got? And I stole this from somebody. I steal all my material from somebody. but I think we went through a grief share class at our church and somebody had mentioned this. I've got 3 kids at home or whatever. So if it's somebody that I don't really know that well, or, you know, I don't want to tell the whole story or whatever, and they ask, hey, do you have any kids? I just say, I've got 3 kids at home. And, because to me and to us, Betsy, our first daughter is part of our family. I go see her often. She's buried, just off, actually right by the armory. I love going to the armory and to Beacon Valley, because every time I drive out by the cemetery and I stop and see her on the way home or on the way out there or whatever. But, you know, that's just part of our story. And, that's how I answer that question. And, it was by far the most difficult experience that I've ever had to go through, like I mentioned in my COT this morning. But it's something that eventually made my faith stronger. I mean, I remember quite vividly that moment that I was on my knees because my wife was still in the hospital. I went home and to get stuff, and I was in her room, and I probably said some things to God that you probably shouldn't say to God, and was just, I just broke down, and it was a very difficult time in my life. It was a time in my life that probably if I had F3, it would have been helpful. But it was something that has had a significant impact on me. It's something that that's just, it's a chapter in my book, I guess, right? And so every time that I talk about my family, that's how I answer that question. And we've got, I've been blessed to have three kids after that, and they know they've got a big sister that's looking down on her, or on all of us. And, you know, that's when I quoted the song lyrics, that song really hits home to me, that Casting Crowns song, Pain and Beauty from the Ashes, Your Life is in My Hands, you know, when you're on your knees, and answers seem so far away. It's that's how I was. I think about that moment when I was on my knees, just thinking that I wasn't going to get to the other side. And, you know, that was a time in my life that we got through, and here we are now.
Yeah. No lightning bolts down from God.
No, yelled at. No, that's the nice thing.
See, God is good. God is good. I can't help but hear that story and just feel that, right? So just thank you for sharing that. I think it's just so cool. And for men to be vulnerable about that sort of stuff, I feel like is so rare. And so I love that you shared that. And I don't want to completely pivot or switch gears, but this is the problem with being vulnerable. Then I know you so well, and I have all these questions. Talk to us about sort of your relationship with alcohol and sort of that journey. Cause I know we share some former passions for for grandpa's cough medicine there.
Yeah, for sure. Again, that was sometimes I wonder, like, why didn't F3 come into my life? Like when I really, really need it. Like, right. If I was around as long as you guys had when I was still a drinker, like that's probably when I needed it. But like, I had gotten to a point where, you know, I'd stopped drinking alcohol and I was in the best physical fitness shape of my life. And then I started F3. Like a lot of guys, it's just the opposite, right? Yeah. Like they're alcoholics. They, are out of shape. Yeah. They get F3 and then F3 solves everything. Like, but you know, that it still worked out great because, you know, hopefully I can share that story with other people. But yeah, I was definitely going down a pretty bad road. Alcohol is always, not always, but you know, from the time I was in college, has been a part of my life, just like a lot of guys. Yeah. But I had gotten to the point where I was drinking a lot heavier. And essentially, if you look up the definition of functioning alcoholic, like I checked all those boxes, like just about was drinking around the clock. And obviously wasn't being a present father, wasn't being a present husband, was just in a really low road. And I think a lot of it was self-medication, really. I think, again, like
from the stuff with your daughter,
from the stuff of my daughter, from the stuff in the Marine Corps that I've gone through that has been difficult. I think just everything, I found that when I would drink to the point of really being blacked out and at a different level, you know, I don't think about any of that kind of stuff. And it got way beyond being a social drinker. And and again, like I said, I was going on a really, really, really bad road that probably had I not stopped, wouldn't be sitting here today. Mm. So that change in my life really obviously started to help me get back to where I needed to be as far as a better father, better, husband, you know, just becoming a better version of myself. And, you know, I think when I share that story now with other people, it hopefully can let guys know that this is possible, because honestly, it was probably the best decision that I've ever made in my life. The list is not long of great decisions that I've probably made, but it was definitely a good one. That,
what was the catalyst for that change?
Yeah, it's kind of funny, but you know, my wife had multiple times, you know, because you fight and you, everything, you know, that just alcohol just makes that whole relationship a lot worse, obviously. And she had plenty of times asked me to stop, slow down, you got to sit, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. But I do remember it was actually my sister that I had a conversation with. It was after a really bad night, and my wife was, I think I had left the house, and my wife called my sister and was like, it's gotten to the point I can't handle it anymore. And so, my sister called me. She's older, a couple of years older. And, I just remember her talking to me, and it was like, all of a sudden this light bulb went off and it just clicked. And I was like, you know, I gotta stop. I have to stop. And that was a little over 5 years ago, January 20th, 2020. And, I've never looked back, and it's just, the idea of eliminating alcohol from my life was almost like the idea of eliminating oxygen. Like, it was like, I don't know how I could live without alcohol, because it was part of my social life. It was all my group of friends. And it was just daunting. And I think one of the things that she said was, don't think about it as like you're quitting. Like, you just stop today, and then the next day, and then it's a week, and it's a month. And then if you get to the point that you think that maybe you can handle it, great. But just don't look at the long road and just take it one day at a time. And that's what I did. And then after about a month, couple months, like, it was just a new lifestyle. I felt better, and I've never looked back.
You know, it's interesting to me. I've had a father that's a recovering alcoholic. He's 18, 19 years sober in January. And then I've got a brother who's going through it right now. And I, you know, as a young man and as a young child with my father going through it, I remember thinking, I want to have a really impactful conversation with my father or with my brother to try and convince him why he should stop drinking. And, you know, loved ones like spouses or brothers or fathers or whatever really want to have that impact. So, you know, I'm interested and just generally curious what you think it was. Obviously, your wife is talking to you and saying, this has got to stop. And she wants it. And you want to do everything you can for your wife and for your kids. But what do you think it was that, coming from your sister, okay, light bulb goes off for me?
I think it was probably just, you know, the relationship that I had with my sister. Like, she, you know, I definitely looked up to her, respect her. And like, I just think hearing it from a different voice too, that like made it click. We have some alcoholism in our family, and, you know, like, I didn't, she just spun it a different way that made it seem less daunting, made it seem like it wasn't something that I couldn't do. Mm. And like I said, I think it was just looking at it from a different perspective, made that light bulb go off. And, it's not, I don't think that I had like a dependence by any stretch of the imagination, because it wasn't hard for me. It was the idea of not being in a social setting where I was drinking was harder than like the dependency of it, I think. Addiction is one thing that I'm not really good at anything in my life. You know, like, when you have an addictive personality, you know, that's something. So I never drank. And the one thing that I've always tried to express is that, like, I'm not trying to get up on a soapbox and say, you should stop drinking, like, alcohol is the devil, you know, whatever. Like, there's plenty of people that can handle
it. I'm on that soapbox.
Yes, and that's fine.
Come talk to me.
That's fine. But like, I know that there are plenty of people that can't handle it. I wasn't one of them. I wasn't somebody that could have a couple beers and be a social drinker. I was drinking until I was no longer awake, pretty much. And you know, so there's only one day, since I started at F3 that I've queued every year, like on an anniversary, and that's January 20th. Mm. So when I've given my COT every time, you know, I'd mentioned that. I'm like, I'm not telling you that you need to quit drinking. I'm telling you that I needed to quit drinking. And that if you recognize any of these same signs in your life, you know, it's not, you can do it too if you need to, but like, if you're good, good.
Yeah, man. Sort of jokingly say that I remember when I was first sober, and I did think pretty much everybody had a problem. But it was more just jealousy and, like, you know, resentment towards the fact that, like, I couldn't handle, you know, my alcohol. I and honestly, it was more of a cocaine problem than an alcohol problem. But
I would be curious. I hear a lot of guys, right? I just saw somebody tweeted out a pre-blast that's like they're queuing tomorrow and they're 100 days sober. And a lot of people these days are sober curious, you know, sort of a thing. But we had an interesting conversation this morning with another guy that is really trying to give this up. And we kind of got to this, like, sometimes you just start drinking to feel like you're bored.
Oh, yeah.
And then before you know it, you have a physical dependence. But just curious if a guy, and I think I heard you say it, but what would you tell a guy that's sort of like, yeah, maybe I need to start, you know, maybe I don't think I have a dependence, not ready to call myself a drug addict or alcoholic, but I do want to go down this journey. What's the best place to start, do you think?
I think for me, at least, it was, again, not making it seem like it has to be this permanent lifestyle change, right? Like, I would hope that anybody that may be going down that road would be able to recognize some potential warning signs. And then if those become more frequent, then like maybe take a look at yourself and be like, yeah, is maybe I do need to, to back it down. And if that's the case, then, just take it day by day. And like, for me, like I said, like after a couple months, like I didn't really even think about it anymore. Like I said, I think it was January 20th. And like, I was like, well, the Super Bowl's coming up. Like, then there's March Madness and then there's always something. Like, so there's never going to be probably a good time to make that change, but you just like anything else, you got to do it. And then if it's, it'll get easier.
Well, and if you didn't know this, just like Hallmark has built a bunch of holidays to get you to buy candy and decorations. You know, I don't know why there's this big sporting event every month. And right now we're doing Masters, and I have to be careful. I'm not overly judgy of guys that are into all that.
I'm like sacrificing some time to be here, not watching the Masters.
Because you're not watching the Masters. Oh, come on.
For me, this is a good sacrifice.
The ball's going to get in the hole. Somebody's going to get a green jacket and you're going to move on with your life. Yeah. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway,
got to watch Sunday if it's close. That's be fine. See? But that's the other thing too. You know, we're coming off this time and everybody has done 75 hard, right? And sure. So, you know, you've done it for 75 days.
Right.
Like, just maybe keep it going. If you like the way, I've never heard anybody that's done 75 hard say anything but good things, right? Yeah. Like, it's like, oh, I feel so much better. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Well, then why on the 76th day are you going back to everything that made you, that you made you not feel the way that you feel now? So like,
well, and like, that's the same concept to me as Mardi Gras. Like, right before Lent, you have Fat Tuesday and everyone just gets bombed.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make a lot of sense. And you know, it's interesting. I've been having a lot of conversations with my brother, and I'm glad you're here. And I talk to Plague about my brother all the time, but you know, I've stopped consuming alcohol so that it's almost like moral superiority over my brother. Cause he's like, well, you get bombed. I'm like, well, you're right. It's kind of hypocritical of me to like talk to you and condemn you about your drinking habits when I'm doing the same thing. So, you know, I quit drinking in January, and then just to feel better about myself, I didn't think I had a problem or anything like that. And then next time I brought it up with my brother, he's like, well, you get bombed. I was like, I don't even drink anymore. He's like, you don't?
Yeah,
hasn't worked, but I mean,
exactly. Well, we'll have a separate episode of the, you know, Say No to Drugs podcast. But Stripes, back to you. You mentioned earlier, right? We've been doing this book study, and for guys that are, you know, he sort of teased you with saying we read two books. He didn't tell you the name. So Titus 10 and Meaning of Marriage, some phenomenal books, I would say.
Are you or someone you know in the market to buy a new home? Well, if so, check out Major Team Mortgage. They specialize in home purchase and refinance home loans. Their mission is to purposely empower people to experience their good life through building wealth with real estate. You know, showing up in the gloom is no different than showing up for a conversation around your future of building wealth with real estate. Join the action economy and get in the game with Sasquatch. Text or call John at 402-212-0149 to schedule a time today.
Individual NMLS number 1393750. Company NMLS number 2478164. Equal housing lender.
And so, just thinking about your faith, talk us through that. What was it like sort of growing up? And then, you know, I guess, how'd you get to where you are today, where you feel like you're growing in that relationship with Sky Q?
Yeah. I've always had church and religion in my life. My family grew up, going to a UCC church, United Church of Christ, First Congregational in Fremont. And So it's always been part of my life growing up. Not my choice, though. Mm. Just like any kid, like you went because your parents made you. You went to youth club or whatever it was called on Wednesday nights because you had to. Mm-hmm. And it's not the same growing up, but I think it's a good starting point, at least, you know, to have that foundation and have it be present in your life, obviously, can lead to growing in your faith as you get older. For me, I think a lot of the times that in experiences I've gone through have just connected me closer and made my faith stronger, right? I think about my time in Iraq, I think about those times where you're just completely, if you don't have faith, like, I don't know how you get through some of those experiences. Mm-hmm. When we lost Betsy, I don't know. When I hear about other people that have lost kids or that have experienced, not just kids, you know, at any point, like, I don't know how you could get through that without faith. And those things, those experiences have all made my faith stronger, I think. But obviously, it's not to say that you only should have faith in your life when you need it, right? So, like, it's always been there, but those experiences have made my faith stronger. And then since starting F3, like you said, being around a group of guys that faith is important and it's a part of the routine. And then when you take it to that next level, it's the dynamite, right? It's going through those conversations that you have when you're going through a book like Titus 10 or The Meaning of Marriage. Those have spilled over into my everyday life, and those have had more of an impact probably on my Concentrica and my personal life than any of the rest. So I think, again, just like when people open up and when you hear other guys talk about their faith, it strengthens your faith. And I've definitely experienced that in F3.
As I sit here listening to your story, like, I get encouraged to hear that your faith has gotten stronger. I mean, the things that you've shared today, I don't think anyone would blame you to say, why, God, I'm going to pull back.
Yeah.
And so I am curious, like, what is it that made you think, okay, I'm going to use these experiences to lean in even harder and build a stronger foundation with your God?
I think it's just, I just think that I came to the realization that I can't do this on my own. I can't get through these experiences on my own. I can't, because sometimes you try, right? Mm-hmm. And that's usually when God slaps you in the face, at least based on my experience. Like, you know, I still got this.
Yeah.
I still got this. So for me, I think it was just, it's just those experiences that just reinforce. I mean, you can read scripture and you can hear it and feed your brain with the knowledge and stuff like that. But until the practical application comes into life based on a real life experience is when I think it really resonates. Mm. So I think having that background and knowing it and then experiencing it and putting it into your actual experiences is what for me really made it click and has grown stronger since I've started F3.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. What do you think is your, cause I think sort of earlier, right, you were slow to, I don't know, your progression through things, right? It's kind of interesting to think through what was it that's sort of got you ready? Do you think to like, okay, yeah, I'll do a book study. Was it just the guys, the relationship over time, or were you sort of like searching for a deeper relationship with God, or I'm just curious on that?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's kind of like, why do you go out and do an 8-mile pre-run or something like that? You know, part
nobody
of it
don't.
Is,
nobody knows. God. Nobody knows, but it's provocative.
It's FOMO a little bit, right? It's guys that you know that you respect that are doing it. You know, I think Speed Bump has talked about it, how like, yeah, I would have never done something like this, but, you know, realize that it's not like, it might have a stigma like Bible study, like, oh, I don't want to do that. And then actually you do it and you realize, well, it's not just Bible study. It's something that, yeah, it's faith-based and but we're looking at something that has that applies to our lives as men.
Yeah.
And we can, you know, share our experiences in this intimate setting and, you know, yeah, just making the decision to do it because other guys are doing it that you respect and that you see that they have a strong faith. And, you know, I want to grow my faith too. So
yeah.
I think that's the biggest thing. It's no different than going to coffee. If you don't like going to coffee and being around guys that you think, but then you go do it and, hey, but if that wasn't so bad, actually, I really enjoy this.
Turns out I love coffee.
Yeah. Right. Right. So I think just getting over that hump of like, it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
And then actually realize, oh, but it's more than just fine. It's
right.
Really awesome.
It's good.
Yeah. I sort of hear this principle that you've applied in several different areas where it's like, how can you simplify the thing so that your brain doesn't see it as this mountain? Mm-hmm. And then just take the first step, whatever that is, one day, 1 hour, not drinking, or go to one book study, talk to one guy. And over time you repeat that. And it has this sort of like, you know, compounding impact, which is just really cool to see. You know, it's awesome. The other thing we'd like to talk about, and we could talk for many more hours, and had we not had technical difficulties, we probably would have. But I want to get your thoughts on leadership. So, you know, our mission, right, to invigorate male community leadership. You have all this experience in what I would consider sort of a leadership organization, right? Within the Marine Corps. You call it the Marine Corps, but in my mind, it's the few, the proud, right? That's the same group of guys.
Oh yeah. That's the slogan.
Okay. Yeah. This is like, so we basically have Jocko on the show. Jocko, I know you listen. I expect you to know. But talk us through leadership, sort of your view on leadership and then would also love to hear the journey through F3, right? VQ, launching a site, current first FQ, future F3 Omaha Nantan.
Yeah, I think that leadership has always been something that I've enjoyed. And I think even with sports growing up, you know, my senior year, I was a captain on the football team and, you know, that, you know, student council, student government, like I've always tried to get into leadership roles and just, because I think it's important. And definitely that's part of what led to my joining the Marine Corps. And I went through, enlisted first, but then went through an officer program. So that definitely had a huge impact on my leadership style and everything that in a lot of ways I've carried over to my civilian life. But, 22 years old, you become a second lieutenant in the Marine Corps and all of a sudden you're in charge of a unit that's got maybe guys that have been in the Marine Corps for 18, 20 years. They've forgotten more about the Marine Corps than you could ever remember. And it's trial by fire for sure. But like, that's one of my biggest things that I've always tried to, instill in any leadership position. It's like, if you go in and into any leadership role and act like you know everything, you're going to fail. And I learned that early on.
And that structure is just so atypical to like a professional setting, right? It's very rare to have a young manager, right, come in and manage people that have been in there for quite a while.
Yeah, it's completely backwards.
Yeah.
And it's interesting the way that the military does that with officers. You know, that's the way it works. You go in and you're in command of a bunch of guys that have been in a lot longer than you. But
did you deal with any resistance from the older guys?
I don't think so, because again, like I went in with the mindset of you've got to rely on these guys that have the experience. I didn't come in trying to act like I was going to change everything. And another one of my leadership philosophies is if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, you know, there's a lot of people that go in and try to just make their mark on whatever they're doing. And I've always tried to apply that philosophy too, but just to be clear, if LPC's listening, I was, when we talk about the Marine Corps, you say Jocko, like I was anything, I was a bean counter, basically. I was not, LPC is like a, you know, is an infantry officer. I was more in an admin role. But you still go through a lot of the same training and everything like that. And at the end of the day,
LPC reported to you.
No, absolutely not. Okay. No. We probably would have had we crossed paths, just because I'm so much older than LPC. Like, I would have been a higher rank had we ever crossed paths. But no, it's basically, you basically have to just understand that you don't know everything. And in my experience, I've tried to carry that over into any other leadership role that I've ever held. Moving on into kind of my F3 leadership experience, I definitely embraced the opportunity to plant that first flag in Bennington. Mm-hmm. And you planted that seed, obviously, the first time that we met. And it was kind of a windy road to get there. At one point, I thought that ship had sailed, and I had almost given up on the idea of doing it, just because, I don't know if you want me to tell the whole story, but it was kind of like
nothing that makes me look bad.
I don't think it would made you look bad, but I still remember I was on a work trip in Florida in Orlando, and it was July. I actually just looked back on the text the other day, when we were going to have this podcast. And this was the time that, we had decided, well, if we're going to launch the site in Bennington, but it's got to be on a Saturday.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, then I'm not your guy. I can't commit to every Saturday morning for a year, because especially starting a little bit later, like we would have done at 6, because I'm super active in my kids' stuff in Bennington Basketball Association. I was at that time like opening up the gym for stuff at like 7:30 in the morning, for the Bennington Basketball Leagues and stuff like that. So like, and my kids are super active, and I knew I had stuff early mornings on Saturdays, and I'm like, I don't think that I can do this. And then that's when I think that was in July. We did those Black Ops in March.
Yeah, it took us a while. And ultimately Sparty was the one with the brilliant idea to say, like, why can't it be both? Like, let's do a Tuesday, let's do a weekday and a Saturday site, which ended up, I think, maybe with some secret sauce there that we learned. And you still got to go first.
Yeah. And I still went first.
Because Tuesday comes before Saturday.
Well, and they were a couple of weeks later too. Like, I wanted them to be a couple months later, but it was fine. That was an awesome experience. Obviously, something that I think that is part of my DNA is, like, I'm a very prideful person too. Mm-hmm. Like, I take a lot of pride in everything I do. You talk about the Marine Corps, the few, the proud, and I think it's probably instilled in me from that experience. But like, we've embraced the Bennington community. We've been there about 10 years, and I bleed Badger blue right now, and I will until there's a second high school that my kids will probably go to, and I'll have some other color or mascot. But I definitely wanted to plant that first flag, I'll be honest with you. And that's how we landed on the name Badger Point. We wanted to make sure it was something close to the community. But yeah, it was something that, like, I also knew that I knew deep down that that a weekday site is actually probably would, I felt like would work better. Yeah. I thought that, there was some concern. Oh, it's too early for a bunch of new guys in the middle of the week that are going to be working. And I was like, well, I know the guys at Bennington, they're up Friday nights, and
it's
just as hard for them to come on a set.
They're at J-Dubs until late in the night, and like, you're going to get more guys on a Tuesday at 5:30 than on a Saturday at 6, I'm telling you. But no, it ended up working out great. And I still remember, it was at the Whetstone Flag Pass where we were talking about, who would be good guys to maybe do a Saturday site too. And having Bridge and House Party. I think that was a perfect mix of guys to plant that Saturday flag. And I've talked about it a lot. Like, it's grown a lot faster than I ever thought it would have. Mm-hmm. And I talked to guys like, like Girl Dad and guys that launched the sites and expanded into new communities. And everybody said, you got to be patient. Don't worry. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a long time to grow. And I just queued bullpen yesterday and talked to that group, and I look around and there's 20 plus guys that are mostly Bennington guys, and I told them, and we got obviously the convergence coming up in Bennington, and I was like, you guys, this is amazing, and it's all because of you guys. It's because of guys like Bernie, it's because of guys like Dinger, it's because of guys like House Party and Fridge, that they're not, I mean, might not necessarily be Bennington guys, but yeah, they were there and just made that explode. And obviously High Point and Low Point now is a great
father son.
And they're like OG Bennington, you know, like they've been around in Bennington for a long time. Like most of the rest of us are just transplants.
High Point's the mayor over there.
Yeah, that's, yeah. When I remember his first day, they called him the mayor of Bennington, Canadian Bacon, brought him to Wolf Den. And he has been really impactful and helped us. We're now going to get field access for the convergence. And he's part of that just because of the relationships that he has in Bennington. It was super special. It's something that I'll always be proud of, and not because of anything that I did. I honestly was just the right guy I was in the right place at the right time. Mm-hmm. Had some of those other relationships, like with Bernie. I knew him prior to F3. I knew Dinger prior to F3. And, it actually, if it had been up to me, if it had gone the way that I thought it was going to go, there were a bunch of other guys that I thought were going to be the ones that were like my king and queen chess pieces that I thought would really make Bennington explode. And I joked at the bullpen launch, I was like, Bernie wasn't the guy that I thought was going to be planting the next flag. And like, I never thought that he would have stuck around, or I didn't even didn't think I would talk to him about F3. You know, it's something like that hooked into him. And then you get guys like Tooth Fairy and Milk Carton and Slim Jim, and it's blown up. And I'm just super proud of all those guys that have made that area grow the way that it has. And I'm just glad to be kind of a small part of it.
That's awesome, man. I do want to briefly talk about the convergence here in a second, but when you plan a Badger Point, you know, a lot of guys want to go in with this idea of what you want for the site. And I'm curious what that was for this particular site. And did that change over time, or did you pretty much keep the same identity of what you wanted to do?
I don't think that we went back and forth kind of with the name. I actually had some different names that I thought that it was going to be. And the one thing that I just wanted it to be represented by was just Bennington and the Badger Blue, obviously being at the high school, at that obviously stayed consistent. I didn't really have, I just wanted to let it organically turn into whatever it was going to be. And I just hoped that, you know, kind of like Field of Dreams, like if you built it, they will come, and if you plant the flag, they will come, and they did, and it was awesome. So Dinger has taken it to the next level. Obviously his numbers are twice what mine were, you know, and pretty soon here we're going to be looking at star fishing off of Tuesdays, I think, because there's 20-25 plus guys almost every Tuesday, and bullpen's the same way, and now we got Riptide launching on Monday. And even though Biscuits isn't an actual Bennington guy, he's going to be a great guy to, he and Zamboni are going to be awesome guys to start that. And it's been neat to see the growth in that.
That's awesome, neck of the woods.
You know, I think you're leaving out maybe a few things that, cause you didn't just build it, right? You built it and then you included guys, encouraged guys, continue to get to know guys. I mean, we had you at one of our West Sector leadership meetings sort of share your secret sauce. I don't know if you'd be, I don't know if that's ready for prime time.
No,
would you share that?
Yeah. I wouldn't recommend it to anybody else doing it because it became kind of a time consuming task. But I decided that even after the first pop-up, I decided it means so much to me that these guys are showing up, I'm going to text them after every beatdown. And I did it at the first beatdown, at the first pop-up. I did it at the second pop-up. I did it at the launch. And that was, you know, 35 guys. And I'm like sending an individual text to every one of them. And I was like, I'm just going to keep doing this.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a good idea at the time. And then I'm like 3 months in and I'm like, geez, yeah, I got to send 17 more texts here before I can start work on a Tuesday morning. And then guys that were there every single week, like Mayday was probably like, yeah, dude, you thank me every week for coming. Like, it's good. You don't have to keep doing it. I'm sure that's probably what he thought. But like, every time you reach out to that, normally the response is like, hey, thanks. It means a lot that you reached out to me. And I think that just establishing that culture of being welcome and being open and And for me, it was, like I said, even though I know that most of the guys didn't show up because of me, it meant a lot to me that they were there.
Yeah.
And that's something that I've always tried to do too. If I see somebody that I know is, that I'm close to, is on the queue, I want to be there for them. I've gone to Sarpy's a bunch of times because Farve has been doing something crazy, and I've gone to, cause I want to support him, because when guys do that to me, it fills my bucket. It means the world to me. So I want to extend that out too. And so when, I guess to your point, when you asked that question, Pony, yeah, that was something that I definitely wanted to make Badger Point be a very welcoming site and just let guys know it means a lot to me, when they show up.
Oh God, we have so many sites now. I mean, people are choosing to go and support you. So like showing gratitude, I think, is an awesome way to go about it.
Yeah. So. And that's another hard thing now, right? It's like, you want to be in four different places at a time, because every day you look at the queue schedule and it's like, well, I want to be there. 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 So where do I choose? That's one of the cool things.
Yeah. We're not going to stop, right? I think we were looking at the numbers out in the Northwest and we're like, well, we need to starfish every day of the week, right? Just about, right? So, I mean, and leading us on the first F efforts, you don't have to go into a ton of detail. Just hearing you talk, we may need to do an episode specific to like, how was that decision actually? you have a ton of work ahead of you and you're doing an excellent job in that space. I think just, taking it slow, right? Listening to the packs and, just thinking about, just your journey. Curious if there's anything else you would want to share with guys, anything that you feel like maybe we didn't cover, something that's on your mind that you want to make sure guys hear you say today.
Yeah, I think, if you're asking like, what advice would I give to guys, who have maybe just started in their F3 journey, I think first I would say, if you can't make it, or if you've been doing it for a while and you got to take a little break or whatever, like don't, that's okay. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of guys feel like accountability is so high with each other, right? We hold each other accountable, which is a great thing. But like, I've done it so many times where like, if I didn't post one day, I feel like the next day that I show up and see whoever was on the queue that day, I need to give them an explanation of why I was there. And I think I got it from, I've heard you say it Plague multiple times. Nobody cares if you don't show up. They're just glad to see you back.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe guys that have had to take a break for a while because of an injury or something like that, like maybe might be reluctant to get back after because, I'm going to have to answer all these questions. Where have I been? They're going to ask me when they're going to wonder what's going on.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
If you took the winter off because it was cold, that's fine too.
Yeah.
It's frowned upon.
I do think you're a wuss, but you should still come back. No, I don't know if I could survive without F3, I would take the winter off too, but I just can't. It's just got to be a part of
my family. I use after tearing my meniscus in basketball season, I now use basketball season as my excuse for not posting as frequently in the winter. Which is legit. Like it's hard to go referee to high school varsity basketball games in Pender, Nebraska or something like that.
Yeah.
Get home at 11 and you haven't eaten since 3. So you're smashing $30 worth of Taco Bell. That's not an exaggeration.
That sounds really good.
And then trying to get up and do something the next day. So, but aside from that, lean into it, and try to explore that second F and that third F when the time is right. Like I said, it's there's so many guys out there that you can learn from and that can push you in those different areas that I would just tell guys to take it out there and
heck yeah.
Don't be afraid.
Well, and we like to ask, you came on here, shared a lot of your story, but today, in the future, when guys see you out in the gloom, words of encouragement, daps, what do you need? What do you need? Prayers from you or for you?
Yeah, I kind of got a lot going on right now. Obviously, just prayers to get through this convergence. I'll be happy when April 27th hits. By the time people listen to this, it's going to be in past probably, unless you cut me up in line, make this a promo for the convergence. But no,
you can pay us.
Yeah. Well, for me, I think it's just every day I need encouragement. I think we all do, just to be the best version of ourselves. It's something that in my daily prayers, when I talk about it, and something that I got from the Titus 10, you know, I ask God for strength and guidance to be the best version of myself and all the assignments to which he's tasked me as a husband, as a father, as a leader, both in the community and at home. And I mentioned that in most of my COT prayers, but really in what our true identity is, right? And for me, you know, being a loyal and faithful and humble servant and follower, you need help with every single day. And just being a child of God is what I want my true identity to be. And so one thing I've mentioned, I think this in COTs before, but I don't think I've done a full on COT on it yet, but I saw something great from, I think it was Nick Saban. He was giving a speech and he was talking about, how do you pray? Do you pray to be blessed or to be a blessing? And that's one area that my faith has developed into. You know, I used to pray a lot for that promotion at work, you know, or pray to be blessed in a certain way. But when you shift that mindset to pray to be a blessing, it becomes really impactful. And that's something that I ask God every day to just allow me to be a blessing in some way or another. And so, like, when I have experiences like this morning, when I talked about the COT, Speed Bump reaches out to me afterwards and says how meaningful it was that I shared some of that stuff, and he's going through some stuff, and, you know, like, that means more to me than anything else. When you give a COT or you say something that, you know, even if it's just one person, it affects one person,
right?
And they you know, like, that's exactly what I needed to hear today. Yeah. And that's part of why I've led so much, I guess. I get asked a lot, well, why are you on the queue schedule like every day of the week? And it's not because I want to hear myself talk, but it's just because, you know, that's another part of my leadership experience, or a philosophy too. Like, going back to that, I've always tried to lead by example. I think that's one thing, especially being newer in the area and trying to get, having been around a lot of newer guys in the Northwest, I want to encourage them to get out and lead. That's one thing. That would be another piece of advice I would give. Your BQ is not the end of it. That's that you need. That's just the start. Right. So get out there and schedule that next one. Get the next one. And there's no reason to wait. Like, if you've been doing F3 for 6 or 7 or 8 weeks, you've seen everybody do it. Get on the queue schedule and keep doing it, because well, that's part of the rotating fashion, part of our part of who we are. So
I love it, brother. I just appreciate you taking time to share your story. And, you know, you were the first first guy to launch a site in Bennington, and the first interview in the new studio at the Nomad here in downtown Elkhorn. So just a man of firsts. So we're going to do a little name-a-rama here. I'll start us off. 39, the plague.
The plague.
Gentlemen, we're 33, Pony Express.
Pony Express. TJ Butler, 46, Stripe.
Call, right? And it's a great call. Some guys razz you and say, like, terrible call.
My favorite is Birdman, whenever he's around, he'll yell, "You suck!" And I love it. That's actually my favorite. But yeah, you'll either get a great call or a terrible call, but Birdman just tells me I suck.
Love it. Good. Appreciate you, fellas. Have a good day.
Thanks, guys.